Mr. Shaw, Reel 8. Now, where were you going? the unusual port of call was St. John's, wasn't
it? Yeah, that's right. I mean,
and what would happen when you got there?
Well, we'd go in and stay in perhaps for 2 or 3 days and refuel, you know, oil fuel or something or other, and get ready to make the return journey with another convoy. We'd leave St. John's and then...
Would you get ashore at St. John's?
I think we could, but I never went ashore there. But I think there was leave given, but I don't think many people did go ashore there. I don't know why, but that's the impression I remember. But on the... to get to the last one...
Hang on, no.
We're not getting to the last
not
one.
Not yet, no. So what about... You'd refuel and rearm at St. John's, and then what about the trip back? Would that be any different? Because you'd have full ships then, wouldn't you?
It varied. Sometimes sometimes the trip back was faster, and sometimes it wasn't. It depended on what the ships were and what they were carrying, etc., etc. And obviously you were allocated, the Admiralty allocated the different escorts to the different convoys. And we used to think it was great if we could get back, or even, well, one way, if we could go one way, say, within the, in 7 or 8 days, we used to think that was terrific. But sometimes it got to 14 days. It's a very slow one, because they wouldn't go in a straight line anyway, apart from the zigzag, and they very often... It would depend on the information and where most of the U-boats were, you see, or you might very often go up south of Iceland, Greenland, and then back down there, you know, in other words, a long trek. Or the other way, the south. So it just depended on the situation at the time. You know, where all the...
And you'd come back into Gourock.
That's right, yeah, we come back into Gourock, and then sometimes... If very often we'd only be in a couple of days, but if you were in due for a boiler clean, we're usually in, you might be in a week. So what they tried to do then was they tried to give, say, 3 days leave to each watch, which was all right for people who lived in, and by this time my wife, I had an aunt in, I told you I was born in Glasgow, my aunt still lived in Glasgow, so my wife, so it was all right for me, 3 days, Gourock to Glasgow by bus. But it wasn't much good for someone who lived perhaps down in the south of England. So the time they got there, it was time to come back. But anyway, that was just one of those things. So, and that was it.
And what was leave like in Glasgow? What was life like in Glasgow?
Well, it was all right for me, because I would just go, my wife was staying with my aunt and uncle, so I'd go there. And if it happened to fall over a weekend, and it was during the football season, and Rangers were playing at home at Ibrooks Park, which was about 10-minute walk from the house, and not only that, if you were in uniform, you got in free, which was more than they ever did in England, despite the fact all the jokes about the Scots. And so I used to, now and again, if I got the chance, I'd go to the football match. If the situation occurred, you know, over the weekend. And that was it. You just sort of make the most of the opportunity while it was there.
How tiring were these convoys?
Well, unfortunately... From our point of view, the watchkeeping point of view, remember earlier on I told you where, when I joined, I didn't have my certificate, and therefore the other two were doing all the night watches for a long time. Well, this situation went on practically all the time, because once I got mine, shortly afterwards, one of the senior ERAs who had his certificate left, and a young lad came on board, and so I was involved then in the night watches with the other chap, and then not long after the new chap would get his engine room certificate, the similar thing happened again. So for quite a long period, I suppose, if I was on that ship 2 years and 7 months, so you could say that for almost half the time, I was doing the middle and morning watches, you know, instead of the three, which didn't make it didn't make you feel too happy, you know what I mean? Admittedly, you're only doing the same number of hours, but you didn't really get a chance of a real decent sleep. I don't know if you follow that. Anyway, that was it. So we were involved in that for quite a while. So that was a bit... but in the end, you got used to it. That was it.
Now, any incidents, big incidents that happened, or were you on North Atlantic convoys throughout the rest of the time until the last convoy?
Oh, yeah.
Any big incidents you remember until the last...
Well, when I'm just trying to... I'm glad you mentioned that, because I'm just trying to think. I realised that temporarily, and this must have been before the convoys really started, we were with H Force in the Mediterranean.
What do you remember of that?
For a little while. When Admiral Somerville, and he was in charge of H Force at the time, he was on the Renown, I think. Well... we didn't know where we were going. We left, I think we were still at Liverpool at the time, on the Harvest, and we didn't know where we were going. We finished up in Gibraltar. And there was this huge convoy of merchant ships going to go through to Malta. And I got it the wrong way around. There were five merchant ships. And it was the escort that amazed me. The escort consisted of, I can't remember exactly, the Ark Royal, the Renown, two more battleships, the Queen Elizabeth was one of them, I think that went through, about four cruisers and eight destroyers, all escorting five merchant ships. But we didn't go right through. We only got, I suppose, must have been a couple of hundred miles from Malta. And luckily for us, we didn't have the German bombers come over. It was the Italian ones, and they dropped their bombs from... the Germans used to come straight down. So we got away with it all right. But that was the only occasion we were involved while I was on the Harvester. We joined H Force temporarily. Ah, now I've got it. I've got the date. I've got it, because we came back. We all came back to Gibraltar, and then the Harvester and another destroyer. I can't think of what one at the time. We were due to escort. This was 1941. A ship full of refugees, women and children. That's right. Back. Home, and it was then that the Bismarck was out, and we were going up that way, and the Bismarck was coming down this way. This was after the Bismarck had sunk the Hood. It was when I was on the Harvester that I heard about the Hood being sunk. Anyway, we were ordered to turn back for 12 hours, the two destroyers with the... I think if we hadn't had this ship full of women and children, we might have had to carry on. I might not be here now, but anyway, that's neither here nor there. We didn't, we were turned back. Yeah, this was a funny thing about, I'll tell you this about this Hood business.
Yeah, I was wondering, going to ask you about your reactions to the sinking of the Hood.
Yeah, well, I've got to tell you about this, and I didn't tell anybody about this for ages and ages. I'd had the first watch from 8 o'clock in the evening till midnight, and that was the occasion when you got your longest sleep, because you didn't have to go on again till 8 o'clock in the next morning, but you had to get up about 7 or thereabouts and give yourself a wash and get your breakfast. So during the night, while I was asleep, I dreamt that the Hood had been sunk. Right, so I got up and I started to lash my hammock up. And I think I'd done about two whacks when the tannoy went. And I think it was the first lieutenant, I don't know, it might have been, anyway, announcing over the tannoy that the hood had been sunk. And I stopped in midair. You know, I was doing it with the right hand. I couldn't believe it. And I thought to myself, now, if I tell any of my messmates this, they'll tell me a load of bloody rubbish. So I didn't tell anybody, and I didn't even tell my wife till months afterwards. And I've always tried to puzzle this out. And the only conclusion I can come to, I mean, rightly or wrongly, is that there are all sorts of radio waves flying through the air at the time, aren't there? Whizzing around from ship to ship, shore to ship, etc. And I can only assume that there was some connection with that, because, I mean, I don't believe in this psychic stuff. Far from it, the complete opposite. I poo-poo it. But this is really what happened. I couldn't believe it at the time.
How did you actually react? I mean, the hood had been quite important, the British.
I was stunned because I dreamt it. I mean, you can imagine, you can imagine how you would have felt. I was really stunned. And then, of course, we were all shocked at the fact that it had been sunk, naturally. But there you are. So, to this day, I've never really been able to solve the mystery. But that's the only thing the only conclusion I'm prepared to accept, unless someone else can disprove it.
Now, any other events before the last convoy?
Let me think. Yeah, we thought on one occasion, I can vaguely remember, that we weren't with a convoy, and this is when before the convoys had been organised, and we thought we'd sighted a German cruiser. And it was the general alarm. They had the general alarm they had the aircraft alarm, the U-boat alarm, and the general alarm, which was a different sound, you see. And of course, we were all unofficially doing this at the time. We thought we'd better have chips now. But as it turned out, it was one of our own cruisers. Luckily for us, I forget which one it was, I didn't know it. So that gave everybody a fright. Well, I don't know whether it gave me a fright, I think it gave most people a fright, because we thought it was a German cruiser. I'm just trying to think if there are any other sort of incidents like that. We had funny sort of comical stuff. This was when Thornton was the captain still, and we were south of Iceland, and we got what we thought was a contact U-boat, and so naturally did all the nonsense, dropping depth charges right, left and centre and so forth and so on, and up came thousands and thousands of fish that were stunned. And the ship was stopped, and I was off watch at the time, and everybody was over one side trying to heave the fish in. You could just heave them out of the water, and the ship was gradually going over and over like this, you know. And all of a sudden, Thornton was on the video, he shouted, "Everybody get over to the other." You know, the ship was almost turning turtle because all the ship's company, or practically all, and we had fish then for about a week. And the Rodney was out with the main fleet somewhere off, and apparently, I mean, I can only go this way, that we'd signalled, our bridges signalled to the Rodney, wanted to know whether they wanted any fish, and their reply was no. But this was a bit of a but you'd never seen so many fish in all your life. They'd all been stunned, mainly herrings, but there are all sorts, big cod and all sorts, and you could just get a boat hook, you didn't need anything special, and hook them in. And of course the cook was fed up the balls at the finish, because he had fish in the galley for days on end after that. But I remember that, yeah. That was a funny incident.
Now I think the next thing is the actual sinking. The last convoy, which was in March 1943, and the sinking was on the 7th.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, what do you remember of that last convoy and of what happened?
Well, we left St. John's, I think it must have been about the 4th or 5th day out when we were... So we left St. John's, we'll say, I think it must have been on the 2nd or 3rd of March. I wouldn't pinpoint that exactly, but we'll say 2nd or 3rd of March. And then we pick up the convoy within a couple of hours, you know, the ships. And then we jogged along quite steadily. We weren't going very fast, 8-9 knots or something. And I think it must have been on the 4th day, we ran into... You remember, you know, the Germans had these wolf packs organised. Well, we ran into one. And there were quite a few merchant ships sunk. You could see them flashes and going down. But anyway, that particular night, I had the middle watch. 12 o'clock midnight to 4 o'clock in the morning. So as I was going along, hanging onto the rope, you know, to go on watch, and I suddenly thought, we've increased speed, we're going at a terrific speed, you see, the ship. But I didn't know what was going on because I was up on deck. So anyway, I got down below and the people on watch were just getting up. They'd been lying down on the deck, flat, you know, on the plates, steel plates in the engine. So for a joke, I said, what's the big idea? You're not supposed to be asleep. So... he said, well, we just had the order from the bridge to lie down because stand by to ram. You see? Stand by. Well, I didn't know this because I'm halfway between the mess and the engine room. So, by that time, the ship had stopped. So the ERA handed over the necessary and what was going on to me, and away he went, and I'm there on watch.
Had they actually rammed anything?
So, and I'm on watch and the ship's going up and down like this. Bang, thump, 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 thump. And a couple of minutes later, the engineer officer and the chief ERA, they're all down on watch. So I said, what's happening? Well, apparently, what had happened was that they stood by to ram, went to ram this U-boat, and just as we got there, a big sea took the ship up, and instead of hitting the U-boat squarely, it sort of, you know, when you do a sardine tin, that sort of situation arose, and the submarine rolled along and then rolled off. That's the banging I heard, and then got jammed in the propeller brackets, the stern. So we were thump, 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 and this was going on for quite a while. So eventually, the submarine got freed, but it was sunk by a French corvette. It came up again, and this French corvette rammed it properly this time and sank it, you see. So this was the one that I was saying that we could nearly claim. But anyway, so... Captain Tate was in charge then, he was the commander, so he wanted to know what the state of the engines were. So the engineer officer, I can't think of his name, this new engineer officer, anyway, that doesn't matter, he said to me, right, we'll try this engine. So I tried that and nothing happened, didn't move. So obviously the shaft had been backwards completely, and it wasn't, or the propeller had come on. Anyway, it didn't. The engine didn't move at all. So he said, "Try the other one." So we tried the other one, and we could get up to about, I forget the number of revolutions, but it was the equivalent of about 8 knots. And then it started making a funny noise. But we said, "Right, leave it at that." So the engineer officer then phoned up the captain. It was these old antiquated voice pipes, you know. One engine's kaput, We can do 8 knots on the other one. So that was that. So they all disappeared, and the engineer and the chief ERA and orders to me that if anything unforeseen happened, I was to let them know. And the ship was carrying on one engine at 8 knots. You see, so obviously we're not going to keep up with the convoy because we're only on one engine doing 8 knots. Which but shortly afterwards, and by this time, I mean, I've done this about 6 times, although I'm not religious. Ace, King, Queen, Jack. And life belt was blown up around this much. All of a sudden, the submarine alarm went. I'd been on watch then about a couple of hours. And I thought, well, that's it. We've had it now. You know, we can't even manoeuvre. But it wasn't a U-boat. It was survivors from one of the merchant ships. So we stopped and we picked up 58, I think. I wouldn't bet on that figure being dead right, but I think we picked up 58 survivors from one of the merchant ships that had been sunk. Right. So we jogged along, and when 4 o'clock came, that's the fastest I've ever left the engine room on any ship. My relief came then, and I was passing over as we were crossing that moment. I was glad to get out of it. Glad to get out of it. Right, so I'm off watch 4 o'clock. This other chap's on. So Nasty, you're a bit tired anyway after doing the middle. So just after 7 o'clock, I'm just about to get up. I'm still in my hammock. And the tannoy went, and this is the first lieutenant speaking, and he said, the propeller has come off the other shaft, the good one, and we're stranded in the middle of the North Atlantic. No, the convoy had gone on, our captain had ordered the convoy to go on. He said, but we've sent for the 2 corvettes, the Narcissus and the Aconite, to come back, and they will take most of the crew off. We'll just leave a steaming party on, a skeleton crew on board, and then they were tow us. And they were due to arrive, he told us the time, I forget now, but the clocks are all put back. Anyway, they were due to arrive about 11 o'clock or something in the morning. So that was that. So there we were, motionless in the middle of the North Atlantic. So normally the rum is piped up about 11 o'clock. But because we'd picked up these survivors from the merchant ships, they decided to have the rum up early and give them a top, because they've been in the water and, you know, not feeling too happy. So they piped for the rum about half an hour earlier, I think. And then 11 o'clock was when the Aconite and the Narcissus were supposed to have arrived. But what actually did arrive then was a torpedo. Now, I was very lucky, no doubt about it. When the more I think about it, I think, God, blimey. And having had the middle watch, I was still up in our mess, and I wasn't due to do anything special all the forenoon, because I would have been back on watch in the afternoon, 12. So I was up in our mess, which was right up underneath the bridge. Now, most other people were either down below or on the lower deck. So I was in the mess, and there was one other ERA with me, and he was on loan. Remember I told you now and again we'd have someone on loan from, and he was about the same age as me. He might have been a couple of months younger. And he was supposed to have left the ship on the previous trip, but the engineer officer had requested permission for him to stay on another trip, you see. And he and I were the only two in the mess at the time, and I said, that's a torpedo. And I'd never...
Was there a big impact?
Yeah, big bang. But me being way up here, didn't get the full... But I said, that's a torpedo. I did, so I guessed it was a torpedo. Well, I was leaning up. The door was there, about that height, but not as wide as that. And I was leaning on that. And before you could say Jack Robinson, he'd gone under my arm and disappeared. I never saw him again. He must have sort of gotten a panic or something. I don't know. And the people were coming up. They had to come up from below in order to get out onto the deck. So I couldn't get out anyway, even if I wanted to. And we weren't lurching or anything. The ship, you know, it was apparently going slowly down. But
Where had it been hit?
On the... Let me get this right. Facing on the port side, and I think in between the engine room and the boiler room, the boiler room would be there, and the engine room, the bulkhead. So it was either the engine room or the boiler room, or round about there. Right, so I then thought, you know, the order was given to abandon ship, so I thought, and I just had my pullover on at the time. So I thought to myself, well, it's going to be a bit cold in North Atlantic in March in the water. So I went and put my jacket on, took the lifebelt off, put the jacket on, put the lifebelt on again, blew it right up. By this time, the people have finished rushing up from down below. So I got out and walked round the forecastle, the starboard side of the forecastle, right round this side, and they were lowering. Now, we all had our abandoned ship station. You're all allocated. And mine was one of the Carly floats. You know a Carly float, don't you? Big raft, sort of thing. I think there were six of them all together, and mine was one of them anyway. So as I was coming by, now this is another odd thing. As I was coming by, the boat was being lowered, and I thought to myself, I stopped. And I thought, oh, I'll be a bit more comfortable in there than on a Carly float. And I hesitated. And I thought, well, no. And I suppose it was just the naval discipline and you're not supposed to do it anyway. So I carried on. Then I had to go down onto the lower deck and then walk along. And my Carly float by this time was out in the water, full up apart from me. I think there were two of us left. Anyway, it was about... wasn't too far away, but here to that fence.
And 20 feet.
Yeah, I thought, well, I can swim that distance, even in the North Atlantic, especially with a bit of a life belt. So I did. By this time, I could step into the water because the ship was going down, but very gently, slowly like this. The captain was up on the bridge, smoking his pipe, watching all of us get off. So I swam out, grabbed hold of the ropes round the side, and I just grabbed hold of it, and somebody said, passed some remark, I forget what it was, I forget now. Anyway, I grabbed hold of the rope, and all of a sudden there was a terrific bang, and automatically went like that, and the chap in front of me did. And when the noise ceased, I looked round, and another torpedo had hit right underneath where this boat was being lowered that I was going to get in. So they were all blown to smithereens, obviously, and the ship was split in two. And it had gone up like that, and the stern end, where I'd got off, was like that, and the front end had gone round the other side. And, of course, the captain, obviously, he was up there, so he'd gone. And so that went down pretty quickly then. And the stern half took a bit longer to go down. And then I was still... this is a personal thing now. I'm still in the water, you see, hanging on. And everybody else was up sitting in the... Although the water was up to there, but at least they were sitting. And I thought to myself, oh, I'm not staying in this much longer. So I clambered up, and probably I was the smallest one there, you see. So I was able to crawl, and I got right in the middle of these. They're all sitting around, and I'm hanging on like grim death, you see. Right. So there we all are, all in the water. And